Good afternoon, and welcome to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier. It's Wednesday, June 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. The Courier is forecasting sunshine, breezy, and a nice day with a high of 86 degrees. Winds will be south-southwest between 10 and 20 miles per hour. Our temperature will go down to 72 tonight under considerable cloudiness, and the winds will be mild, south 8 to 16 miles per hour. As we look around the region, mostly sunny, breezy, and pleasant today. Considerable cloudiness tonight. A couple of thunderstorms tomorrow. Friday, a shower in the morning, followed by a thunderstorm in the afternoon. Our full moon is coming on June 24th, that's tomorrow, and the sun rose this morning at 5:33 a.m., and it sets tonight at 5:51 p.m. Our stories on the front page today include trial starts in lawsuit against Cedar Falls over PSOs. Prosecutor, robber fired 10 shots at wounded Iowa deputy. Abortion waiting period blocked. And we will begin with The Birds Have Landed. This story is filed by Jeff Reinitz, and it begins with a photograph of Jane Messingham, a board member for Main Street Waterloo, and she's trying out a new Bird e-scooter during the program's launch on Tuesday. Waterloo. Waterloo's new e-scooter service took flight Tuesday, launching with a handful of electronic vehicles in the downtown area. Quote, affordable micro-mobility, getting around town electrically, is the goal, said Craig Bennett Jr., a Waterloo native who is the local fleet manager for Bird, the national company providing the electronic scooters. Quote, I think it's a great thing for Waterloo, and I'm glad it's finally here, Bennett said. Users can download the Bird app and then locate the electronic scooters on the app's map. The vehicles have a QR code that can be scanned to begin the rental. It costs $1 to start, and the average trip costs about $5, according to organizers. Quote, we have 9 or 10 available right now, Bennett said. He said by the end of the week, more should be available. City officials and organizers with Main Street Waterloo and Experience Waterloo took turns riding the scooters in the Courtyard Marriott parking lot during Tuesday's kickoff event. Quote, when I was in San Antonio, I had an opportunity to ride a scooter, and it was a great way to be able to see downtown. It was incredible, Mayor Quentin Hart said. The scooters, which max out at about 15 miles per hour, operate in downtown and adjacent areas shown on the map. The map also shows approved drop-off locations and places that are off-limits, like Riverside Skate Park. Bennett said he became interested in e-scooter rentals after hearing about them in Texas. A couple of years ago, I saw this in bigger cities. I thought that it would be great for back home. I always had faith in Waterloo, Bennett said. He started talking with Bird to get information, but nothing panned out. Years later, he renewed the conversation with the company, and he heard it was interested in roosting in Waterloo. Quote, I always thought they were cool. This has been something I've been waiting for, and I'm glad I get to be a part of it, he said. The Bird fleet is just the beginning for Bennett's company, Micro Mobility and EV Management. Quote, it's not going to stop at scooters. There are electric bikes as well. And eventually, I want this company to manage and charge electric vehicles like Teslas while you are at work. That trend is taking off, Bennett said. This next story is filed by Grant Schulte of the Associated Press, and it's titled, Iowa Court Blocks Mandatory Waiting Period for Abortion. An Iowa judge blocked a state law that would have imposed a 24-hour waiting period before women could get abortions, likely setting up a legal battle before the state Supreme Court. Judge Mitchell Turner ruled Monday that because legislators passed the law last year as an amendment to an unrelated bill, it violated the Iowa Constitution's single-subject rule, which requires amendments and bills to naturally relate to one another. Furthermore, he found that the law also ran afoul of a 2018 Iowa Supreme Court decision that protects abortion rights. Abortion rights advocates celebrated the ruling, saying it would preserve women's access to the procedure and remove a barrier for those who want to terminate their pregnancies. Quote, the court righted a legislative overreach related to abortion care, said Jamie Birch Elliott, executive director for public policy for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa, which was a party to the lawsuit challenging the law. A spokesman for the Iowa Attorney General's office said the state plans to appeal. The law was championed by abortion opponents, including Republican Governor Kim Reynolds. In a statement on the day she signed it, Reynolds said she was, quote, proud to stand up for the sanctity of every human life, unquote. The law would have required a woman to wait 24 hours after an initial appointment for an abortion before the procedure can begin. Planned Parenthood lawyers argued that it might force some women to wait months to get a second appointment and incur additional costs, which would be particularly burdensome for low-income women. Turner previously issued a temporary order to prevent the law from taking effect while it was being challenged in court. The Republican-controlled legislature passed the law during a middle-of-the-night session last year, drawing criticism from abortion rights supporters that the measure wasn't subjected to adequate public input. Quote, the court finds the amendment was clearly log-rolled with other legislation, since the amendment was attached to a non-controversial measure regarding the withdrawal of life-sustaining procedures from a minor, Turner said in his Monday ruling. Some legislators have said they hoped the case would go to the Iowa Supreme Court, which has become decidedly more conservative since the 2018 decision striking down a 72-hour abortion waiting period. Two dissenters in the 2018 case, Thomas Waterman and Edward Mansfield, are both Republican appointees and remain on the court. They have been joined by four new justices appointed by Reynolds. Only one justice was appointed by a Democratic governor who supported abortion rights, but that doesn't ensure the court will overturn the 2018 ruling. Next, prosecutors say robber fired 10 shots at wounded Iowa deputy. Story filed by Ryan Foley. Iowa City. A Chicago man robbed two Iowa gas station employees at gunpoint and confined them in a cooler before he fired 10 shots at a sheriff's deputy who responded to the crime, seriously wounding the officer, prosecutors said Tuesday. The shots fired by Stanley Donahue injured the left hip and leg of Linn County Deputy William Halverson, who was wearing a protective vest, prosecutors said in a criminal complaint. Donahue then allegedly stole Halverson's service weapon and fled the Casey's General Store in Coggin, a town about 20 miles northeast of Cedar Rapids. Halverson remained hospitalized in stable condition Tuesday at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. The shooting of Halverson, who has worked for the county for 7 years, was the first of an on-duty Linn County deputy since 1973. Authorities captured Donahue, 36, on Monday afternoon near Coggin after a 14-hour manhunt that involved a drone, an airplane, search dogs, and dozens of officers. He was arrested without incident after being spotted by a television news crew who called police. Linn County prosecutors allege in the criminal complaint that Donahue robbed two Casey employees at gunpoint after 10 p.m. Sunday, stealing cash from the register and a safe, cigarettes, and their personal belongings. He then confined them in a store cooler. Halverson was the first to respond to a store alarm signifying a robbery in progress and was met by Donahue after he entered through the front door. Donahue repeatedly shot at Halverson and wounded him before he took the deputy's gun and fled in a minivan, the complaint states. Another deputy tried to pull him over, but Donahue sped away before crashing into concrete barriers on a bridge that was under construction, the complaint says. He then fled on foot and managed to evade authorities for 14 hours. In the minivan, investigators say they found the handgun Donahue used to shoot Halverson. They also recovered the deputy's service weapon and merchandise stolen during the robbery. Donahue has been charged with 10 counts, including attempting to murder an officer, disarming an officer, first-degree robbery, false imprisonment, trafficking stolen weapons, and possessing a gun as a felon. The most serious carry sentences of up to 50 years in prison. If convicted of attempting to murder an officer, he would be required to serve 100% of the prison sentence imposed and not be eligible for parole. During a brief court appearance Tuesday, a judge set Donahue's bond at $2.5 million and appointed the public defender's office to represent him. No attorney has made an appearance on his behalf. Authorities say Donahue, who is in custody at the Linn County Jail, was previously convicted of felonies in Illinois and Oklahoma. Next, testimony begins in trial over Cedar Falls Public Safety Command jobs, story filed by Jeff Reinitz, and begins with a photograph taken of the exterior of the Cedar Falls Public Safety Police and Fire Facility. Waterloo. A Black Hawk County judge has started to hear testimony in a lawsuit challenging how the city of Cedar Falls filled leadership roles when it moved to its public safety model. In 2018, the city put the finishing touches on its public safety officer program, which uses cross-trained personnel to handle police and fire services. The decision ultimately led to the layoff of the rank-and-file union firefighters. The International Association of Firefighters, Local 1366, filed a suit against the city over the matter. Taking the stand Tuesday, Scott Dix, a former Cedar Falls firefighter and the only current member of the union, said the city's current command structure places fire crews and residents in danger. At issue are the newly created command positions of public safety supervisor, captains, and lieutenants that fall under the police and fire divisions. Dix said the supervisor positions don't meet the training, experience, and physical fitness requirements to hold firefighting leadership roles. Dix testified the former requirements for fire captain included 4 years of professional firefighting experience and certifications up to Fire Officer 1, along with the prerequisite certifications. The public safety supervisor captain requirements only list 4 years of fire experience, but it doesn't specify professional experience, Dix said. He said this means membership on a volunteer department could count, and the position only requires Firefighter 1 certification, an entry-level certification, he said. Dix said he applied for the public safety supervisor positions, but was told he didn't qualify because he didn't have any police certification. He said officers from the Cedar Falls Police Department were allowed to train next to firefighters during the transition to gain experience, and the suit alleges the process favored police officers in filling the leadership roles. Laid-off firefighters were told they could apply for entry-level public safety officer jobs, Dix said. Attorneys for the union said the leadership job requirements violate Section 400.17 of Iowa Code, which addresses qualifications for public and fire jobs. Dix, of Janesville, is asking the court to decertify the leadership positions and direct the city to use the old requirements for the positions or develop new ones that comply with state law. Attorney Andrew Tice, representing the city, said the public safety positions deal with promotion process and the part of Iowa Code the union is relying upon doesn't address promotions. He said the city's requirement for the positions exceeds state requirements. And now we turn to the Cedar Valley page, and we begin with the Call the Courier column. Question: when will the College Hill Arts Festival be held this summer? Answer: the College Hill Arts Festival announced on its Facebook page May 1st that this year's event was canceled due to uncertainty created by the COVID pandemic. The festival takes months of planning, and organizers could not predict what the COVID situation would be like for this summer's exhibition, which had been scheduled for June 18th through the 19th. The College Hill Arts Festival plans to return next year on June 17th through 18th, 2022. Question: do you have phone numbers for any of the farmers markets? Answer: Here are the phone numbers found on the Facebook pages of local farmers markets. Waterloo Urban Farmers Market, 319-291-2038. Cedar Falls Farmers Market, 319-404-0372. Dunkerton Farmers Market, 319-822-4247. Cedar Valley Farmers Market at Kimball Ridge, Evansdale Farmers Market, Cedar Valley Farmers Market at Shiloh Baptist Church, 319-296-1840. College Hill Farmers Market, 319-273-7883. Question: who wrote the editorial saying, quote, "In Iowa, anything can be a school," unquote? Answer: it originally appeared in the Des Moines Register. Question: when did Carter's and Oshkosh close in Cedar Falls, and why did they close? Answer: the children's apparel and accessories retailer, Carter's, announced in October it planned to close 25% of its bricks-and-mortar stores, or about 200 locations. Carter's owns Oshkosh Bigosh brands. Several business publications noted the COVID pandemic was a major factor in the closings. Question: when traveling and the airline says it needs a negative COVID test, can I get that test done anywhere? I heard of someone traveling to Hawaii and they had to spend $250 for it to be done there with their specialists. Answer: if traveling internationally, you must get a COVID-19 test no more than 3 days before you return by air to the United States. You are required to show a negative COVID-19 test result or documentation of recovery from COVID-19 before boarding a flight to the United States. The order does not apply to air passengers flying within the U.S. or from a U.S. territory to a U.S. state. Question: how can one sign up for a paper route? Answer: we have a few daily and Sunday-only routes available in Waterloo, Cedar Falls, and the surrounding areas. For more information about each, including earning potential and locations, please contact Erica at 319-291-1516. Question: where can we get a COVID-19 test when Test Iowa closes? Answer: all Test Iowa sites will close by July 16th, as the demand for testing has reached its lowest level in more than a year. The Iowa Department of Public Health and State Hygienic Lab are finalizing plans to provide free at-home test kits. More details will be provided in the coming weeks. Meanwhile, COVID-19 testing will continue to be provided by healthcare providers, pharmacies, and other retail testing sites statewide. Question: can an employer ask you if you have gotten a COVID-19 vaccine? Answer: yes. Governor Kim Reynolds on May 22nd signed into law a bill barring government entities, private businesses, and venues open to the public from requiring Iowans to present proof they've been vaccinated for COVID-19. The bill does not affect requirements employers may place on employees. Pat Kinney filed the next article, titled 8 Over 80 Winner and Dear Marketing Exec Don Frazier Promoted Labors of Love and Faith. Cedar Falls. Don Frazier has tried to live life, quote, by the book. It was a prime motivation for the career John Deere employee to engage in a number of activities serving a wide range of people throughout the Cedar Valley. He worked with disadvantaged youth in Waterloo schools, delivered Meals on Wheels to shut-in seniors, supported and wrote a newsletter for University of Northern Iowa Panther Wrestling, and volunteered at the Dan Gable Museum. He also held leadership roles with Riverview Conference Center and the Cedar Falls Bible Conference. All his endeavors were labors of faith and love. He found direction from a group of businessmen in a weekly Bible study. Many were members of Nazareth Lutheran Church, where he is a member. Quote, we used to meet at the Medical Associates building down on Clay Street by the post office at 6th and Clay in downtown Cedar Falls, Frazier said. Then study group member Dick Davis, who operated a local Slumberland store, provided space at his store's various locations over the years. Quote, "It was a wonderful group. I learned a lot from them. It helped strengthen me physically and in my relationship with God," he said. Among those in the group who inspired him was the late Dr. Neil Williams, a Waterloo East High School graduate, longtime Cedar Falls surgeon, and Satori Memorial Hospital trustee, who, with his wife Lillian, embarked on a number of medical mission trips to the Middle East, Latin America, and Africa. Quote, "We were pretty much the same age, and he gave me some good advice and got me involved in some things," Fraser said of Dr. Williams. "He was very instrumental in leading me in my Christian life and personal life, and he was part of that Bible study." Fraser grew up in Moline, Illinois, and graduated from Augustana College in Rock Island, competing in wrestling in high school and college. He began working for Deere in the Quad Cities in 1952 and came to Waterloo to work for the company in 1972. He retired from Deere after 37 years as product information manager from the Waterloo Tractor Works operation on East Donald Street in Waterloo. The facility is now known as Tractor Cab Assembly Operations. "I spent time in sales promotion, advertising, and merchandising. That's my background with Deere," he said, beginning at company headquarters in Moline. Quote, "I thought I was plenty hotshot writer at Augustana," he said self-effacingly. Quote, "I was in publications on campus, so I interviewed in the Deere advertising department, but I soon found out I was over my head. But he learned the ropes at state fairs and trade shows, working various positions regionally and at company headquarters before coming to Waterloo. When he first came to town, Deere's local marketing officers were in the former Arlen's department store building off University Avenue, where Upper Iowa University's Waterloo campus is now located. Quote, "We kind of kidded ourselves in the marketing department was in the old lingerie department," he laughed. "We had a good crew. They were among the first departments which moved out to the Deere's Donald Street site, referred to locally then as the Northeast site, before Final Tractor Assembly was fully moved there from downtown in about 1981. After taking early retirement from the company in 1987, he worked under contract with Deere as a consultant to train marketing assistants. In the meantime, he faced a different kind of challenge. He became a prostate cancer survivor. He had his prostate removed, then developed issues with kidney stones, only to discover the cancer had come back. He went through a series of radiation treatments at the Covenant Cancer Treatment Center. Quote, "Fortunately, it did kill the cancer, so I'm a two-time cancer survivor," he said, with several subsequent joint and hip replacements to boot. Quote, "I have more replacement parts than I do original parts," he said. He turns 91 this month, but still maintains a large yard at his home with a couple of strategically positioned chairs for rest time. For about 10 years from the mid-1990s through the mid-2000s, he and fellow Deere retiree Arvid Waschek and friend Dick Berkey mentored young people in the Waterloo schools, bringing them to the Blackhawk County YMCA for swimming, basketball, wrestling, and fellowship. Quote, "We even got outside of the Y and played football with them. I was probably about 75 or 80 then," he said. Quote, "The Y was very kind in letting us use their facilities. We think we did some good. The mentoring included Bible study." At the other end of the age spectrum, Fraser drew a lot of satisfaction from dealing with seniors and homebound individuals by delivering meals. Quote, "It was so good to be able to bring a little light into the lives of those people, even if it was for only a few minutes," he said. "I tried to spend some time with them, asking them how they are doing, how's the family. That brought me some joy, and I'd like to think it brought them some joy too." Quote, "A lot of this is connected to the fact that I worked quite a bit with people, and I felt comfortable with people, and I felt at ease talking with them and working with them," he said. and I'd like to think I'm a good listener. He's especially attentive to one person in particular, his wife Phyllis. They met at church at NAS and have been wed for 35 years. It's the second marriage for both, and the families have blended well. Phyllis thought enough of Don's service to nominate him for the Courier's 8 over 80 recognition. Now that she's nominated him, Don quipped, he has to behave himself. Andrew Wind filed this next story titled, Hawkeye Community College Board Approves 3.5% Boost in President's Compensation. Waterloo. Hawkeye Community College President Don Holcomb's salary and benefits are growing by 3.51%. The Board of Trustees approved an $8,000 increase in Holcomb's salary and extended his 3-year contract following a 20-minute closed session. That boosts his annual base salary to $254,500, effective July 1st, when the new fiscal year starts. Along with other benefits, including a vehicle allowance, retirement plan contribution, and expense reimbursement, Holcomb's total compensation for the next year will be $280,880. That is a $9,520 increase from his salary and benefits of $271,360 during the current fiscal year. Quote, which we think is fair compensation for what has happened and how he has led the college, Board Chairman Jay Nardini said before the vote, speaking on behalf of the trustees. Quote, we are all very pleased with Dr. Holcomb, and I would go as far as to say he is the perfect person for the job with what has happened in the past year. The board approved the increase unanimously, with 5 of the 9 trustees in attendance at the meeting. Last month, trustees also met in closed session for about 40 minutes to evaluate Holcomb's performance. Nardini was referencing Holcomb's leadership through the COVID-19 pandemic, which first hit Iowa in March 2020. It caused the community college to move classes online last spring and take a number of other measures in the time since to protect students and staff from the virus. While working for Miami University in Ohio years ago, Holcomb helped lead a crisis response team, which he said was, quote, very beneficial experience to have gone through ahead of dealing with COVID-19. Quote, who knew I was going to come here and have a pandemic, he said. Quote, I love Hawkeye Community College, he told trustees. It's been a great gift for me. It's been a great challenge for me, unquote. Holcomb is starting his 3rd year as president of Hawkeye. He was hired with an annual salary of $246,500, starting on July 1st, 2019, plus other benefits for total compensation of $261,500. For the coming year, the board boosted his vehicle allowance from $8,400 to $9,600. Trustees also added $320 to Holcomb's annual retirement plan contribution, bringing it to $10,180, or 4% of his base salary. His annual expense reimbursement is remaining at $6,600. Holcomb's 3.51% total compensation increase is above what other college employees are receiving for the next year. His salary, not including benefits, grew by 3.25%. In April, the board approved a 3% wage increase for all college staff, full and part-time. That included faculty who are represented by the Hawkeye Professional Educators Association. The association is in the midst of a 3-year contract where a 2.75% raise had been negotiated for the coming year. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls The Courier for Wednesday, June 23rd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Janesville. Douglas Dale Smith, 72, of Janesville, died Saturday, June 19, 2021, at the Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo, following a courageous battle with cancer. Doug was born April 23, 1949, in Dallas, Oregon, the son of Wilbur and Esther, maiden name Slack, Smith. He graduated from Cedar Falls High School in 1967. On September 1, 1972, he was united in marriage to Leslie, maiden name Eastman, Smith, at the Finsford Community Church in Finsford, Iowa. To this union, two daughters were born. Doug's military service spanned 3 years. He entered the United States Army, serving during the Vietnam War in 1969, until his honorable discharge from active duty in 1971. He then served with the Iowa Army National Guard, 1133rd Transportation Company, where he was deployed to Desert Storm in 1990 through 1991, and then Operation Iraqi Freedom from 2003 to 2004. Doug's work in the private sector included Midwest Industrial Services from 1991 to 2010, and then Power Line Supply from 2010 until his retirement in May of 2015. Prior to his illness, Doug enjoyed the outdoors. During his long, sedentary days, he worked crossword puzzles, honed his faith, and became a prayer warrior. A public visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday, June 24, 2021, at the Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly. A private family burial will be held in Finchford Cemetery, where military rites will be given. Memorials may be directed to the family, and online condolences may be left at www.kaisercorson.com. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is 319-352-1187. Tripola. Joyce Ellen Hayman was called home to our Lord on June 13, 2021, at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Joyce was born on September 12, 1944, in Waukon, Iowa, to Don and Helen, maiden name Ago, Schofield. Joyce grew up in Monona and graduated from MFL High School in 1962. Joyce met Mike Hammond in high school and was united in marriage on January 28, 1963, in Monona, Iowa. They resided and raised their family in Tripola, Iowa. Joyce's love for kids led her to own and operate A to Z preschool for 25 years. She was able to help hundreds of families in the Tripola area prepare their children for public school. Joyce loved cooking, playing games, gathering with friends and family, and watching sports. Some of her favorite times were baking and decorating Christmas cookies with her boys, her grandchildren, and then her great-grandchildren. She also devoted her time and energy to any family or friends' needs. Her cooking and conversation brightened any event. A celebration of life will be held later this summer. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the family in memory of Joyce and directed to Mike Hayman, 806 6th Street Northwest, Waverly, Iowa, 50677. Online condolences are welcome at www.iowacremation.com under obituaries. Waterloo, Judith M. Judy Colvin, 80, of Waterloo, died Monday, June 21, 2021, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital after a short illness. She was born July 19, 1940, in Ossian, the daughter of Victor C. and Florence E. Wickham Leibold. She was a 1958 graduate of Waterloo West High School and attended Pitsey's Beauty School. Judy married Donald W. Colvin, Sr., on August 6, 1959, at St. Edward Catholic Church in Waterloo. He preceded her in death on June 13, 2005. She worked as a housekeeper most recently in the rectory at St. Edward Catholic Church. She also worked in the cafeteria at Columbus High School. Mass of Christian burial will be held 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 24, 2021, at Queen of Peace Parish, with burial in Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour before the service at the church. Memorials may be directed to the family. Kern's Funeral Service, Kimball Chapel, is in charge of arrangements. Their phone number is 319 833-3146. Online condolences may be left at www.kernsfuneralservice.com. Clarksville. Joanne Lucille Depew, age 78, of Clarksville, Iowa, died Sunday, June 20, 2021, at Clarksville Skilled Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Clarksville, Iowa, from natural causes. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 25, 2021, at the Community United Methodist Church, with burial in the Linwood Cemetery, both in Clarksville. Visitation will be from 4 o'clock to 7 o'clock on Thursday at the Redmond Funeral and Cremation Services, Clarksville Funeral Home, area code 319-278-4245, and 1 hour before services at the church. Memorials may be directed to the Community United Methodist Church or Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences may be left at www.redmondfuneral.com. Let's turn to the sports page now. In prep baseball, Home Guard Slam lifts number one Newman past Columbus. This story is filed by Craig Sesker, a sports correspondent. Waterloo. One of the most challenging things to do in sports is hitting a baseball, unless you're Nash Home Guard. The Mason City Newman Jr. followed Monday's spectacular showing with another phenomenal power display Tuesday night. One day after blasting a remarkable 4 home runs, Home Guard crushed a grand slam to spark the Class 1A No. 1 Knights to a 10-2 win over Waterloo Columbus. Quote, "I've continued to become more confident at the plate," Home Guard said. Quote, "I knew I could hit well, but I just didn't have the confidence early in the season. I kept working hard in practice, and it's starting to carry over into the games," unquote. Columbus, 14-6, kept the game close early after the start was delayed an hour because of a nasty storm that swept through Nicholas Solentek Memorial Field. Newman improved to 20-1 overall. "Newman does a lot of things well that make them such a good team," Columbus coach Mark Gallagher said. Quote, "I don't think we played as bad as the scoreboard looked. It was a good learning experience, seeing a team that does everything the right way. Our kids doing a good job, and I'm still happy with where we're at," unquote. The Sailors trailed just 3-1 following Carter's. Gallagher's ringing RBI double drove in Caden Hartz in the third inning. But perennial power Newman, the 2020 state runner-up, responded with 5 runs on the top of the fourth. Holcomb capped the outburst by clearing the bases after launching a long home run to left field. He had homered 4 times on Monday, with the wind blowing out against West Fork. He hit for the home run cycle after belting a grand slam, a 3-run shot, a 2-run homer, and a solo blast. Quote, "I've never seen anything like this, but I will say I'm not that surprised by it," Newman coach Alex Bowl said. Nash has been drilling the left-center field gap in the games before that. He had 4 or 5 balls go off the base of the wall. He made a minor adjustment with his swing path, and it's been fun to watch the last couple of nights. He has been putting on a show, unquote. Home Guard spent most of his day Tuesday doing numerous interviews with the media on the heels of his magical 4-homer performance on Monday. Quote, "West Fork is a rival," Home Guard said. "I came up in the first inning with no outs and the bases loaded, and I knew I had to do something good. It just kind of snowballed after that. It was a special night," unquote. Home Guard came back strong Tuesday with an RBI single in his first at-bat before connecting on his second grand slam in as many days on his third plate appearance. Quote, "You had a sense there was going to be a little bit of a letdown after Monday night," Bowl said. "You don't want him to press, but he came back Tuesday, got a good pitch to hit, and he jumped all over it. It was another impressive performance," unquote. Making Home Guard's recent power surge even more impressive is that he had just 1 homer and 14 RBIs in his first 19 games this season. He has collected 5 homers and 15 RBIs in his last 2 games. Quote, "Everything's going pretty well now," Holmgaard said. "My teammates have done a great job getting on base, and I'm just trying to drive them in." The Sailors scored their second run in the sixth inning. Carter Gallagher reached on a one-out single to left before later scoring on Patrick Steele's RBI single. The game was called after six innings because of darkness. Gallagher, Alex Feldman, and Alex Purdy contributed two hits apiece for Columbus. Quote, "Carter's been swinging it really well," Coach Gallagher said. "When he sees better competition, he really steps up. A kid that probably doesn't get enough credit is Alex Purdy behind the plate. He worked his tail off and did a great job defensively. He's a tough kid," unquote. Columbus will look to regroup when it battles Hudson in a key doubleheader. Quote, "Those are key conference games, and they are very important," Coach Gallagher said. "That's a big one for us," unquote. In the Metro Roundup, Cedar Falls extends win streak to 5 with a sweep of Liberty. Courier staff reported this article. North Liberty. Cedar Falls improved to 12-14 overall with a Mississippi Valley Conference doubleheader sweep of Iowa City Liberty Tuesday. Lex Hess had a huge night driving in 6 runs for the Tigers. In the opener, Hess doubled and drove in 4 runs as the Tigers used an 8-run sixth inning to pull away. Sophie Stanek added a 2-for-3 effort when she scored twice. Sydney Barnett scored 3 times for Cedar Falls. Winning pitcher Amy Runyon scattered 7 hits to earn the win. Ronnie Steffener went 2-for-4 with a solo home run in the nightcap, a 6-5 victory. Stanek also collected 2 hits. The wins extended Cedar Falls' win streak to 5. Columbus is victorious. Sydney Gardner homered for the 3rd straight game as Waterloo Columbus topped Janesville 13-1 Tuesday in a non-conference softball game. Gardner went 3-for-4 with 4 RBIs and 3 runs scored to lead the Sailors improved to 18-4. The home run was Gardner's 7th of the season. Reagan Lindsay scored 3 times, and Nasiya Simmons scored twice and drove in 2 runs for Columbus. Now this story about the Waterloo Blackhawks. Blackhawks P.K. O'Handley stepping away from coaching duties, filed by Jim Nelson. And it begins with a photograph with the caption, "Waterloo head coach P.K. O'Handley watches the game from the bench on November 26, 2015, at Young Arena. After 19 seasons as head coach, O'Handley is moving into a new position with the team as president of hockey operations, Waterloo. It is not a retirement." P.K. O'Handley wants that message to be clear to Waterloo Blackhawks fans. Tuesday, O'Handley announced he is stepping away from his duties as head coach of the Blackhawks and transitioning into the position of president of hockey operations for the organization. The move comes 19 years after O'Handley was hired to take over a floundering franchise and raised it to unprecedented heights in the junior hockey world. But after 30 seasons behind the bench, 26 of them in the USHL, O'Handley says it's time for a break. Quote, "Nothing will change," O'Handley said. "My competitiveness isn't going to change. The competitiveness of the organization is not going to change. None of that is going to change. The only difference is I won't be standing behind the bench anymore." Quote, "I'm not retiring. I'm taking a step back to take a step forward," unquote. O'Handley's new position will give him overseeing the entire hockey department for the Blackhawks, and he will continue to assist the business department as needed. O'Handley helped oversee the team's draft last month, as well as its initial tryout camp this month. He has already begun the process to find his replacement. Quote, "The timing is right, and now we have a little bit of a window before our next camp, and I think the timing is perfect to interview some candidates, learn some things, and find the right person to carry on," O'Handley said. "Ideally, we are not going to rush it, but do it expeditiously to have a new guy here by the 1st of August, if not sooner." The Blackhawks report for orientation camp on August 2nd, quote, "I don't like talking about myself, but we have created something that is pretty special here in Waterloo, and I'm going to guess we are going to get a lot of special candidates," O'Handley added. A Superior, Wisconsin native, O'Handley began his coaching career at Wisconsin-Eau Claire after his collegiate career was cut short by concussions. He spent 6 seasons as Blue Gold assistant coach. In 1990, O'Handley actually interviewed to be the Blackhawks head coach, a position that eventually went to Rob Grillo. A year later, he landed the head coach job at Mason City for the USHL's North Iowa Huskies. 4 years later, O'Handley convinced Wisconsin lumber magnate Butch Johnson to buy the Huskies. Ironically, 8 years later, Johnson convinced O'Handley to leave the Florida Everblades of the East Coast Hockey League, an affiliate of the Carolina Hurricanes, to become the new head coach of the Waterloo Blackhawks. O'Handley was hired May 22, 2002, 1 day after Johnson fired Scott Koberinski. O'Handley's first season as head coach saw Blackhawks win 38 games and finish 2 points out of the Anderson Cup race. A year later, led by future NHL All-Star Joe Pavelski, Waterloo won the Clark Cup, the first USHL title of any kind in 25 years for the franchise. Now the all-time winningest coach in the USHL, O'Handley never imagined he'd stay with Waterloo for 19 years. "No," O'Handley said, "it was going to be 1, 2, maybe 3 years and move on. But this became home. We, my wife Maria and I, immersed ourselves in the Cedar Valley, and the Cedar Valley accepted us, and it has been a terrific marriage. We could not be more thrilled to be part of it," unquote. O'Handley and the Waterloo Cedar Falls fit so well together that the coach turned down multiple opportunities over the past 2 decades to join the coaching staffs of either an American Hockey League organization or a National Hockey League franchise. Quote, "I have turned down opportunities, but have no regrets about doing so," O'Handley said. 19 years in one spot, that is unheard of in sports. "I will leave it up to other people to decide whether my impact has been good or not. It is just time to do something else." In his tenure with Waterloo, O'Handley has seen 21 former players reach the NHL, including 13 who played this season. He has had 7 players picked in either the first or second round since 2013, including first-round selections Brock Boeser, Vancouver 2014, and Shane Bowers, Ottawa 2017. O'Handley won't be behind the Blackhawks bench when Waterloo opens the 2021-22 season, but he will be somewhere inside the building. And he won't rule out returning to coaching. Quote, "You never say never," O'Handley said. "I'm not going to miss getting off the bus at 5 a.m. for a while, yet I'm going to miss that." Quote, "Will I coach again? I guess the better answer is, I'm still a pretty good hockey coach. I need a break. The Waterloo Blackhawks are my life's work. Every minute of every day since I have been here have been about the Waterloo Blackhawks." Quote, "The opportunity to continue that and make sure it is staying on the trajectory and vision I had 19 years ago is important to me," unquote. Now we turn back to read more local news. Cyber attackers hit Wolf Eye Clinic, taking info of 500,000 patients, story filed by Amy Rivers. Waterloo. Roughly 500,000 current and former patients of Wolf Eye Clinic locations around Iowa may have had personal information stolen in a February 8th ransomware attack, the company announced Tuesday. Wolf Eye Clinic, headquartered in Marshalltown and with locations across the state, including in Cedar Falls, Waterloo, Waverly, Toledo, and Traer, said personal records may have been inappropriately accessed as a part of a cyber-related incident. The attack happened when hackers gained access to Wolf's computer network, blocked access to some systems and information, and demanded an unspecified ransom, which the company said it did not pay. Wolf then used an independent IT specialist and forensic investigators to figure out how far into the company's system the cyber attackers got, only realizing how much was taken May 28th. The investigation officially concluded June 8th, the company said. Asked why the company waited another 2 weeks to inform the public, Wolf spokesperson Cassandra Trainery said, "It takes a tremendous amount of time to investigate and learn the full extent of the scope," unquote. Trenery said it was unclear how many patients at Cedar Valley offices were affected. She said letters would be sent to all affected people. Quote, "We take our responsibility to protect personal information in our control very seriously and apologize for any concern or inconvenience this may cause," Luke Bland, Wolf's chief financial officer, said in a press release. He said the company would continue to closely monitor the attack. Such cyber attacks, in which malicious hackers take over a computer network and refuse to let a company back in unless they are paid, usually in untraceable cryptocurrency, are on the rise in recent years. Security breaches increased a whopping 67% between 2014 and 2019. According to Accenture, the average cost to a company was $3.86 million, while the average time to identify that a breach even occurred was 207 days, according to a 2020 IBM report. Large companies and even government entities aren't immune. Cybersecurity services firm BlueVoyant found a 50% increase in cyber attacks between 2017 and 2019 for local and state governments, and recent ransomware attacks have hit Meatpacker JBS and shut down Colonial Pipeline. But healthcare is the biggest industry getting hit, according to the IBM report. Quote, "Unfortunately, these types of cyber incidents have become all too common for healthcare providers of all sizes nationwide," said Bland in the release. Next, Reynolds creates Carbon Sequestration Task Force, filed by the Courier Des Moines Bureau. Des Moines. Governor Kim Reynolds signed an executive order Tuesday launching a task force to explore carbon sequestration and the opportunities she said it presents for future economic development in Iowa. Reynolds will serve as the leader of the Carbon Sequestration Task Force that her office said fulfills a recommendation made by an Economic Recovery Advisory Board she previously appointed. Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Nyag will serve as vice chairman of the task force. Quote, "Because of our existing supply chain and emphasis on renewable fuel infrastructure, Iowa is in a strong position to capitalize on the growing nationwide demand for a more carbon-free economy," Reynolds said in a statement. Quote, "Iowa is a recognized leader in renewable fuel and food production, and this is another opportunity to lead and be innovative, invest in Iowa agriculture, and facilitate new sources of revenue for our agriculture and energy sectors," unquote. Reynolds said she expected those named to the panel will assist in formulating policy recommendations ahead of the 2022 legislative session. The state's Economic Development Authority will issue a request for proposals to hire a consultant team to support the work of the task force, according to the governor's office. In addition, individuals interested in serving on an agriculture or energy work group to support the task force can find more information at iowaeda.com/carbon-sequestration. In a story filed by Jeff Reinitz, longtime judge died at Black Hawk County Courthouse, Waterloo. A longtime Black Hawk County judge has died. Paramedics and staff deputies were called to the courthouse shortly before 6 p.m. Tuesday after cleaning staff noticed the light was on in District Associate Judge Jeffrey Harris's office. He was found unresponsive, according to authorities. The death appears to be related to a medical condition, and no foul play is suspected, but an autopsy will be scheduled to determine the official cause of death, said Captain Mark Herbst at the Sheriff's Office. Harris of Grundy Center earned his undergraduate degree from the University of Minnesota in 1974, and obtained his law degree from the University of Iowa School of Law in 1977. He practiced law while in the U.S. Army, where he served until 1989 and was an Army judge advocate. He also worked for the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the Legal Corporation of Iowa, and the Black Hawk County Attorney's Office. He was appointed to the bench in 1997. In the Metro Briefs column, Zoom presentation set on smokestacks, Waterloo. The Waterloo Community Foundation will hold a Windows on Waterloo presentation at 11 a.m. July 11th about Silos and Smokestacks National Heritage Area. You can join this free monthly Zoom presentation by contacting the foundation at info@wlucommunityfoundation.org. Silos and Smokestacks are celebrating its 27th anniversary and invites the public to stop by its new office at 305 West Park Avenue, across from the Public Market in downtown. Mercy One Cancer Units Accredited, Waterloo. The Commission on Cancer of the American College of Surgeons has granted a 3-year accreditation to both Mercy One Waterloo Cancer Center and Mercy One Waterloo Breast Center. These locations are the only comprehensive, accredited, and multidisciplinary cancer and breast centers in the area. Quote, accreditation means we provide a standard of care throughout the area that's similar to what a big city would provide, said Dr. Vandana Jain, a radiation oncologist at Mercy One Waterloo Cancer Center. Quote, we are able to provide these highest standards of care here in Waterloo, so you do not have to travel far from your home, unquote. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls, The Courier, for Wednesday, June 23rd. I'm your reader, Bob Young. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time, and you may wish now to stay tuned to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald, which follows shortly. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.